I'm Rachel Smith, and my voice is a weapon against wrongdoing, and so is yours. Join me as I expose the truth and stand up for those affected by military sexual trauma. We can break the silence together. Welcome to the Silence Voices of MST. Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of the Silence Voices of MST. I'm your host, Rachel Smith. I'm really excited about today's episode. Although the topic is military sexual trauma, as usual, we do have a guest here. Her name is Cheryl Mullick, and she is a part of PAVE USA. It is an organization that places service dogs with handlers. These service dogs are trained to work with their handlers, whether they have epilepsy, diabetes, or severe PTSD. From, you guessed it, MST. She's such a sweet lady, and I know you're going to want to leave her a message, so I'll tell you how at the end of the episode. Here's Cheryl.
Hi, everyone. My name is Cheryl Mullick, and thank you so much for having me on this call. Okay, my backstory is a long, long life with animals. And my grandfather was a dog trainer, and in fact, the day I came home from the hospital, I was brought to a dog kennel. And so I was raised, because we lived with my grandparents when I was a baby, I learned to love animals from the get-go. As a toddler, I was hanging onto dogs and loving them. And I also, as a very young child, got involved with horses as well. We were in the Midwest, moved to the West Coast, went to finish college, got married, had some kids, and then I just was so hungry for animals again. It ended up me being involved with dogs. So I was a breeder and exhibitor of champion German Shepherd dogs all over the country for about 18 years. I did that. So everything I do, I just go all in. And then these children grew up. And right before the recession, it hit me that I was spending money hand over fist showing dogs, which is basically, you do not make money doing that. You just spend money. So I was always training. Everything you do, you're training. It's just like raising a child. You're either training or you're untraining. I just switched my business over to dog training. And I did that for about 20 years and did everything I needed to do. And it was just ramping it up to the next level right before everything went digital and everybody was teaching online. We created something and we were, you know, incorporating an online dog training program into what we were doing here on the property. And then one evening we went to, when I say we, it was my daughter and I, who was working with me, and we went to a dog trainer meeting. And all these trainers were introducing themselves and their business models and what they were doing. And we were so pumped up. And there was a woman there, and she introduced herself that she had started this nonprofit for helping veterans with service dogs. And of course, my mind was completely somewhere else. It was into marketing and just going for it in the business world. And I just thought, oh, that's really nice. And then later she posted on the Facebook group that she was looking for some people to foster dogs. And I said, okay, yeah, I can do that. What's one more dog? And in fact, I think I was the only one that really responded, yes, I'll volunteer to help. I mean, I could, what's one more dog? But I didn't really understand the whole veteran part. So anyway, I started doing that. And then before long, one dog turned into two and three. And then I started helping her train the dogs and work with the veterans. And that's when everything changed for me. And the second person that walked through my door for training was a Special Forces veteran. He had been Special Forces for 13 years. So you can only imagine. And I was just like, I don't even know what I'm looking at. It was so interesting and intriguing and just heart-wrenching all at the same time. So that was the beginning for me. And that was 2014. The organization started in 2010. And so in 2014, I just started doing this and integrating it into my time. And then we eventually, after we got all those kids educated, married, and we just phased out our business in favor of doing this. So that's kind of my story in a big nutshell. And it's been huge getting to know these people. So, and I was intrigued by the dog training and the teaching dogs different kinds of things. That was certainly, it really had captivated me. But that wasn't the reason, the real reason, because I could always go out and teach the dogs a new sport or something, but it was the people. And so I couldn't not do this. When somebody, you know, shares with you that you saved their life, that everybody would like to do that. So, but it has its price. I mean, you're right in the middle of it and you feel so much for them and how you can help them. And then who can you help? Because you can't help them all. Then that takes you into the business end of it. So then eventually I became the client advisor because I love people and I love helping and I know them all so well. I'm still training, but actually most of my time is spent on the veterans themselves and training the training camps and training them because they need a lot of work as well.
Right. Wow. That is incredible to hear. And I know I see service dogs out and about every now and then, but seeing the bond that they have with their handler is nothing short of incredible. So what is the process when someone wants to start with a service animal? How does it work? Does it start from being a puppy?
No, not necessarily. Oh, well, first of all, a little bit on the dogs themselves, because it kind of touches on the question that you just asked. We typically do not start with very tiny dogs. Sometimes we do. We'll have puppies that we raise from the ground up, but it takes a long, long time for them to be ready. So it takes approximately 2 years per dog to do everything we need to do. All of the basic things, all of the basic training, their manners have to be impeccable. They have to be the right dog. You can't just take any dog and turn it into a service dog. It has to have just a stellar temperament, unflappable, and then have all the training on top of it. We have a few dogs right now that we have raised from the ground up, but many times we will get a dog that is a teenage dog from another organization. And so we would do the same thing. So it's like with nonprofits, if you have a nonprofit and you have a lot of money and you have to quit, well, then you gift that money to another nonprofit. You just don't like go to Costco. Right. You know, and you don't just spend the money. So what happens is that is a good source for nonprofit service dog organizations. We kind of swap around. Maybe, you know, if somebody has a dog that isn't working for what they need for the disability they're trying to serve, then it may work for us. We get a large amount of our dogs from Guide Dogs for the Blind, who are local here. And so they work with a number of nonprofit service dog groups. And if it doesn't work for a blind person, it may work for one of us. Anyway, where the person comes into it, the client, somebody may think that they need a service dog, or maybe their provider has suggested one, or maybe they've had one in the past, or they see other people with dogs, and they just think that this would be, you know, the greatest thing for them. So our screening process is very detailed. We have some requirements for them to even receive an application because sadly we can't help them all. You know, their problems are from A to Z, men, women, old, young, mobility issues, you know, of course the PTSD, and it can be very vast. But if they're homeless, sadly, you know, these dogs are extremely loved and valued. And we can't just hand a dog to everybody that thinks that they need a dog. So we have a process that we go through, and a lot of it is mandated to us by our accrediting body, which is Assistance Dogs International. So there's only one worldwide oversight group for service dogs, the only exception being the CNI dogs have their own federation, but all the rest of us, whether it's diabetic alert, seizure alert, autism, PTSD, mobility, they all fall under the Assistance Dogs International or ADI. And so all of our standards are very high, and we have a lot of oversight on how we do this. So going back to an application, if somebody inquires, we respond to them. We will start with emails and then get to a phone call and explain. And if we can't serve them, their needs or something that we don't do, then we refer them on to another group or to go back to the ADI to search. So we're narrowing it down. So for PTSD, things that we have to have for our organization is that they have to have an honorable discharge from the military. They need to have a disability rating with the VA that verifies, yes, they do have these problems. And for PTSD, they have to be in treatment. They need to be in treatment currently with a provider that is acknowledging that this might be a good intervention for this person, and this provider is supportive. So this person, this therapist, counselor, psychologist, social worker type of person is actually involved in the application. So that way we know that we're doing the right thing, because we can't just take a stab in the dark at this. We also have a mental health professional on our staff that helps us to do that, because we know a lot over the years. You learn a lot, but we're not the professional licensed psychologist. So we have one of those to help us. So the application process just kind of goes along in steps. And at any point, you know, in the early stages of it, that's where we're saying, okay, you've got to, if you're not in treatment, you don't need to go get in treatment to see if this would be a good thing, because we can't make all those judgments. I mean, we're very professional as to how we do things, but this is why we have this person to help us. So if an application does come in, then we start reviewing it. And of course, we're talking to the person live. And we're perhaps doing a home visit. We used to do all of them in person, but then during COVID, we learned, like, even I can do that. And so we will get out and we'll visit with these people. And, you know, do they have a family? Do they have a job? Do they have other pets? What are their needs? And just go through all of that. So that by the time we're actually pairing a dog to a person, a lot of work has gone into it. We have to know their lifestyle. You know, would they need a dog that had more, a little bit more get up and go? Or do they need a very, very laid back dog? You know, how tall are they? I mean, there's so many factors that come into it that, you know, that's not the number one thing for sure. But I always ask just to make sure. And of course, if we've met the person, then it's pretty obvious. So the pairing is very crucial, very crucial. So does that answer your question about that?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. That is, I do think that's incredibly beneficial that people aren't just, you know, out there willy-nilly getting animals. So,
well, you can't. Yeah, you have to be professional, because you can't afford to make a mistake. And, you know, we do background checks. I mean, we have to have people that can go the life of the dog, you know, and then they have to be compliant. And we have a lot of follow through. So these veterans get these dogs free of charge. And also they get lifetime follow up training and support for the life of the dog. So, and at the end of that time, at the end of the dog's, you know, working career, if we decide that this dog needs to be retired, it's a mutual thing between us, their veterinarian, for example, and the person. And we don't take that dog away. We let them retire with the family, if at all possible. And then if they've been a good client, we will provide a successor dog for them. So they just go through an application process again, but they, you know, we take care of them. So imagine choosing people that you know that for the rest of your working life, you're going to be, you know, taking care of these people, dealing with these people. It has to be a good relationship. I tell every veteran, this whole thing is about relationship. It's about your relationship with the dog, and it's about your relationship with us, because it's ongoing. The dogs have to be loved so much in order to give. It's like a marriage. If you don't love, it just doesn't work, because there's going to be rough times, and it's long, it's enduring. You just get into it and go, this is my life. This is my life. And sadly, dogs don't live as long as humans, but we're always there, and we train constantly, you know, with people. We answer all their questions 24/7. If anybody needs anything, we're there. And we do training, like I said, and also retesting once a year. So that's an official benchmark. And then we record, you know, all of these things in our database for our governing body to oversee what we're doing. As far as training the dogs, we only use positive reinforcement training. We don't use any aversive methods at all. And it's amazing what they do. And that was exciting, I will admit, as a dog trainer, to go from what I was doing with training pet dogs to training these dogs to do tasks for people, to interrupt their nightmares, or to pick up on their hormones. So that's pretty tricky. It's tricky for us to imagine it, but it's easy for the dogs. Once they know what the scent is that they're trying to pick up on. So a diabetic alert dog would be looking for low blood sugars or high blood sugars. Seizures would be looking for some neurological thing going on. So for us, it's the scent of the hormones of adrenaline and cortisol is what we train for the scent. But these dogs, once they figure out and know this person so well, because they're always together, then they have, for us, they have picked up on different things like abnormal activity in the body. Even like a heart attack.
Wow. That is incredible.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's such an honor to be part of it, to train a dog for a person and to their specific needs. So that is the definition of a service dog. It's a dog trained for the specific needs of an individual. So it's not one size fits all. Certainly, we have the things that are typically wrong or upsetting with a veteran, and there's a list of those things, but the dogs will go above and beyond. So we're training for those things that we know they have. We go through all of this with the screening, what their disability involves. What is it like? Is it nightmare interruption? Is it extreme anxiety? Is it panic? And usually it's just a whole bunch of things all at once, you know, all in one. And then we teach the dogs certain alerts to let that person know. And then they also come up with some of their own too. It's really interesting to see what some of these dogs come up with. I mean, maybe they know that their person responds best if there's always a lot of eye contact, just looking in their face into the human's face, and the dog like, you know, the dog looking at the human looking at the dog. A lot of times the dog will use their paw and just take the person by the arm or the hand. We teach them nudges. We teach them deep pressure therapy into pressing into the person's leg if they're seated. So it depends on what position an individual would be in. Would they be in bed thrashing with a nightmare? That would look one way. That would be some nudging, licking. And they seem to go to those places where the hormones are coming out of our body. So like anywhere in your body that you would be applying like cologne, deodorant, you know, like around the ear area, that's sometimes when people are sleeping where the dog may come, like to the ear, right around the side of the face. And they might be licking to wake them up or just nudging them.
So I'm curious how... with the military sexual trauma survivor, how do you dial into their particular scent when maybe there's a nightmare or a panic attack coming on?
Oh, that's a great question. So before they come to camp, so we have training camps for the individual and their dog. And in fact, just while I'm mentioning camps, typically service dog organizations will have a group camp, like whatever, they'll haul in, you know, so many people, and they're, you're going to be in the August camp, say, for example. So, but what we do is we do our camps one-on-one. So we have a whole week dedicated to the knowledge that they need to know about this dog, how you treat the dog, all of the learning theory for the dog, you know, all of the ins and outs short of manually working with the dog. Then we spend a whole week with them doing hands-on. And then at the end of that week, they graduate. So they've had 2 weeks of private training. So, but in preparation for the first part of that, the kind of the book learning part, if you will, we send them a kit and they start collecting samples.
Oh, okay.
And so what that involves, the different scents that dogs are trying to pick up, whether it's, well, just think in a general sense, think of explosives, dogs that go looking for explosives. They can find something as tiny as a little tiny bullet, or they can find a bomb, but they have to know how to go. So they're trained to that scent. Then we have drug detection dogs, and they're trained to specific drugs. So like, say, a drug detection dog might be trained to cocaine, heroin, and whatever, you know, so they're trained to those specific scents. So for us, the scent is actually in the saliva.
Oh,
so
huh, I didn't expect that. Who would know?
Yeah. So what we do is we send the veteran that's going to be coming to camp a little kit with some cotton. I like to use these little cotton rolls like they may use at the dentist to put in your cheek, because that kind of soaks up saliva, right? We've tried a few different things, but this is my latest. I love this. Because you can stick it in there and nobody really notices too much. So if you're starting to feel anxious over whatever the things are that trigger you, for us people that don't have PTSD, it could be, oh no, I'm late, I'm in a hurry. Whatever your thing is, that's my thing. So I'm speaking to when I grab the cotton, because we have so many pressures in this life. So, but these people, when they start to feel, you know, like, oh my gosh, I'm really anxious, or I'm starting to have panic, they use that kit. They just pop, you know, one of those in their mouth. Then they let it be in there for a little bit, soaking up that saliva. And then they put it into a little Ziploc baggie and freeze it. And then when they come to camp, we've got their scent. And when we're training before the actual person comes, we're just using samples that we've collected before, that we have in our freezer, right? And what the scent training, we have worked with scent trainers. We've actually worked in, because smell is smell. We have worked with people that do scent training and do bomb detection for the military, the FBI, say. Watching them train those dogs is helpful to us, because we see, oh my gosh, you know, all they do is you train it to the scent that you're looking to detect. So with us, we can train ahead of time to the scent of the hormones, that when the person actually brings their scent samples, and there's the person right there that this dog is going to be smelling from now on. Everybody has a signature scent. So we would have, you know, there's a general scent of a hormone, and then piled onto that is your own specific scent. So then that's when the magic happens, because now the dog is identifying it with this person. And I mean, they can find it, smell it from rooms away.
How interesting.
And that was really amazing. Wow. That was really amazing to see that and to see it happen. And it's so many experiences I've had, and I've seen amazing things even on day one. I've seen the dog react. One short story, one of the more recent women we did, I had the dog that she was going to start working. They don't meet the dog till they come. And I had it in another room, completely away from where we were talking on day one. We were just visiting and she was filling out some more paperwork. And this dog was wonderful. I mean, so well behaved, never made a sound, never would pull you off your feet, never. It was so sweet. But the whole time we were talking, and I think this dog picked up her scent from a room away. And so I said, well, okay, I'm going to go get your dog now. You can meet your dog. And that dog drugged me to her. The dog had never seen her before in her whole life.
Wow.
And she drugged me to this person and was just all over her, just licking and so excited.
Wow.
And the dog knew it. And she smelled, she had to be a little anxious to finally come out of her room, her home where she's been locked in, isolating, to come here, to travel here, to get here. And this dog sensed it. And that was the beginning of the magic. It happened that very first minute that the two of them got together. Because the dog says, oh, now this is it. It's her. And somehow they know.
That was just amazing. Yeah. So there's like the bond is already formed prior to, wow.
In a way. And I think, and then it gets reinforced because then that relationship starts to happen. The relationship between that person and that dog. So from the moment that person and the dog get together, I start backing away. So like I will use another dog as a demonstrator and let that dog really hone in on that person because I need to like back off. But the dogs just seem to know. They just seem to know this is it. And then within 3 days, I can count the days, 3 days at the most. Usually it's before that. The dog is looking at me like, huh? You know, like you're no longer it.
Yeah. Don't take it personal.
She's it. Yeah. Don't take it personal, but I'm alive.
Oh.
But it, no. So the scent is really an important part of what we do because with mental health, there are these fluctuations. And if the dog can notify the person, because so often the dog is starting to react and then the person is looking at them like, what are you doing? You know, even in the training part, like, well, I just told you to lay on your rug and you keep breaking your stay and coming over to me, putting your paw on my arm. What is going, you know, because as humans, we just don't have, we don't have that kind of intelligence where we can smell, navigate the world by smell. So the dog sense of smell is so many more times. I mean, I've heard numbers like 1,000 times stronger, just say. I don't even know that we really know that, but they can track things and smell things that we can't smell at all. And we can't smell it on ourselves. And the dogs notify the person because they're like, there it is. And so they tell them before they even realize that they're anxious. So, which is really helpful for these women that struggle so badly. And then they start to, we always tell them, trust the dog. And if the dog is doing that, they can kind of pull themselves aside, breathe, and realize what's happening before they get into a full-blown panic attack.
That is incredible. So it's
amazing. So I feel like we're just the catalyst to making all this happen. The magic is really between the dog and the person.
I understand.
Yeah, dogs are amazing.
They're just little angels on four legs. I'm a big fan of dogs. Are there certain go-tos for things that the dog alerts on? So it's panic attacks, it's nightmares. Are there more things?
Depression, the oncoming panic, anxiety, mood swings. Yeah, it's basically those types of things that just cripples these people. To where they can't fear. I mean, all of those things all tied into one that makes those hormones start surging where the person is just paralyzed. And then they get used to that. So I wish I could give a really straight up answer, but the dogs are the ones that know.
Right.
You know, they know. And the people can tell you when we start interviewing them as potential candidates, we ask them, what are the things? And it's always anxiety. And the women can be a little bit different. Like they get very uptight if like somebody walks behind them. And it can be in a parking lot. It doesn't have to be right behind them. It can be quite a ways over, like two rows of cars away. And they're just kind of always watching. They have trouble sleeping. That is men and women. I mean, most of these things kind of cross over. I would say the women, what I've noticed is that they just feel crippled because they They shrink back more so in a sense than even the men, I think, because I think as women, we feel more vulnerable. I mean, half of the world is bigger than us.
That's true. That's very true.
And then you just, it's more like victimized maybe, rather than as opposed to someone that had a lot of trauma from combat, say. It's just a little bit more along that victimhood side, which kind of just pulls them under emotionally. I just see a difference. And with us, about half of our clients are women. We have no restrictions. Like if an organization were to say, we only do those that were actually in combat, that would eliminate most of the women.
Right.
And then the fact that the world doesn't understand them. That's another I'm victimized type of thing. I mean, nobody wants to go around and just go, I'm a victim. But, and they don't want to be thinking that, but nobody even recognizes that they served our country. Even if they're walking around with a service dog, people most likely would think they're a dog trainer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a younger woman with a dog, and are you the trainer? Are you training that dog? I tell them all when we go out and start working in public, which we do during camp, like that's what people are going to, if they say anything, it's, oh, beautiful dog. Thank you. We just keep walking because these people don't need a conversation. Sometimes it will take a while, even if somebody knows someone or meets them in business, like, oh, that dog is for you. Are you a veteran? People do not think that way. They don't understand that there's women. They really, really don't. And that's just such a debilitating mindset. And then having the actual fear itself of, you know, people around, or, you know, somebody walking behind you or walking behind your booth at a restaurant. You know, all of these things I've seen where people just freeze up and we just don't think that much about it. It all ties together as far as the training. So if we're training dogs, we're training for these basic things and for the scent. And it may manifest itself a little bit differently with each person, which we understand that. And the dog figures it out. So this dog gets hooked and just connected to this person and they're always together. The dog figures it out. We don't have to spell it out to the dog. Like, how would you even do that?
Right.
How would you even do that? It's just so good that they're so smart and intuitive as to the moods of their handler and the things that they're sensing, their behaviors and their scent that they're emitting.
Is there maybe a particular breed that is more successful at this, or it could be just any dog with the right temperament?
Okay, great question. Yes. I mean, there are breeds of dogs that work better for service dogs because they need to be well-behaved in public, and then they have to have been trained really, really well. So I guess, you know, all dogs have a good sense of smell, some better than others. Obviously, a dog with a good nose that we know can hunt or smell or sniff out, they may be better than, say, a pug who barely has a face, you
right.
know,
oh, those
very
flat things.
Face.
Yeah,
very flat faced dogs. They're probably not the best. So, but you have to look at other aspects of this work as well. You need a dog that is going to be reliable, that's not going to be jumpy. It can't be doing reactive barking, all kinds of things. So you also need a very steady dog. So retrievers have turned out to be the number one favorite. If you have a bloodline or you're getting dogs from a very stellar program, then you're going to have good success as far as the genetic things that could go wrong with just any dog. Just having that workup on the dogs for generation after generation, that's very helpful. But retrievers are great because they're friendly. They get along with people. They're not skittish. They're not going to just have go-to barking over every little thing. and they have to be very, very solid. So those are the types of dogs that we use. Many organizations are using that type of dog. Training for mobility, like real heavy mobility, then you need perhaps a bigger dog. But that's a different thing. We don't really do that, so we don't have to worry, you know, about the size of the dog. Can this dog hold up a 200-pound person with their back? So it's basically retrievers are really a favorite, I think, everywhere. So, and everything that we have right now is a retriever.
They're big sweethearts. That's like my favorite. I had a chocolate lab at one point, and he was just my dog. He wasn't really trained in any sort of mental health stuff. But when, I want to say it was like 2015, I had gotten put on a new medication. It was Lunesta, and it was a sleep med. And I'd been on sleep medications before, so I figured like, oh, okay, I'll take the med, take my dog out so he can go pee, and then we'll go to bed. And I have no memory of this, but like I think I made it to the bottom of the stairs from my apartment, and I was on the third floor. I passed out. That's like the med just took me out completely. And my puppy, he was maybe 8 months old, 9 months old at the time, but he just immediately knew something was wrong and just barked and barked and barked and barked until somebody came out like, well, somebody quiet this dog. And then they saw me. Eventually, I think one of the people that came out was one of my neighbors, and they were like, oh, wow. And so the people were like, do we call an ambulance? But they're like, well, she doesn't smell like alcohol, so she's not drunk. So my neighbor managed to get me back inside, and she called my dad and let him know what happened. But yeah, he just kind of intrinsically knew this isn't normal and was able to figure it out. And I thought that was absolutely incredible for him being a puppy. That the most I think I had taught him, other than, you know, like basic manners, was stay, you know, like don't run after that or drop it or leave it. But when I did wake up and I was in my house and or in my apartment, and I'm like, what happened? But she was there and explained everything. And I was like, that is incredible that a dog would just immediately spring into action like that. So that is so amazing that so much care and love and work goes into creating that bond between two entities. That's amazing.
Yeah. And it is.
So if that particular veteran has a family, are they also taught different commands and things with the dog?
That's a good question. Yes and no.
Yes and no.
So it's great to have a backup. So this particular person has a husband and two small children. So the husband has to be schooled on how do you take the dog out to go do its business in the event she isn't feeling well or something like that, or an emergency or whatever. But it's not a family pet. So everybody in the family has to know that this is mom's dog. And that it's not like a free-for-all, or else the dog would just be turning into a family pet really quickly. However, with this particular person, very cute story. Well, first of all, backing up about the disability itself in these women with children. I have talked to these women over and over that are in this situation. And if they have, you know, a spouse and children, they're just, it's so much better than being alone. That we also, another one comes to mind that is a single parent, and her boy was about 15 at the time, and very intelligent person, but was isolating, you know, couldn't get out, couldn't go to those crowds, couldn't do the things. And this boy, all he wanted to do was be normal, and he wanted to play sports, but she had nobody. I mean, she had nobody. To the point where when she had to come to camp, that I said, just bring him with you. I love kids, so we'll work it out. Because she had nobody to leave this boy with. And he wanted to do sports so bad. He kept jumping in the middle of things. Cheryl, look at this picture of me with a football helmet on. You know, he wanted to, but she couldn't do it. And to her, there was so much guilt and shame around that, that she couldn't be the mom that she wanted to be. So when she went home after camp with the dog and the boy, Next Monday, she sends me a picture. She's at football practice.
Oh, wow.
And this boy is in high school now. And he, I swear, is in every sport. He is lettering in sports. She's going to all kinds of tournaments constantly. So if it isn't football, it's basketball or wrestling or track. And she is going to all of these things. And now she feels so much better.
Yeah.
And she's so proud of herself. And she can be a good mom. But the one with the little children and the husband, you know, the children have to know, okay, they can't, it's not a free-for-all with the dog. So we have some little things that maybe the children could do, maybe help brush the dog or change its water or whatever, that she found a perfect little solution. The kids can play with the dog 10 minutes a day while she makes dinner. And we teach the dogs sometimes to pick things up and put them places. So the kids have their stuff scattered all over the house, right, from all day because they're small children. So for 10 minutes while she's starting dinner, the kids can tell the dog to go pick up all the toys and put them back in the basket. And then that's it. And that satisfies the children that they have a part in it and the dog is part of their family and it's really helping their mom and it goes everywhere mom goes. So, but there's still a little, but it needs to be structured. And it can't just be the family pet. It's got to be honed in on this one person. Yeah. So, but we work it out because, you know, you can't like get rid of your family just to get a dog. Right. You know, it has to blend in. And our dogs are used to children. So they're used to children and that have been brought up that way. Like, this isn't like a free for all. With the dog, like my grandchildren have been trained how to take dogs out to, you know, do their business. And they help us, kind of like kennel help when they come over. So because one person couldn't do it all because we've got multiple. So, but it's structure and organization and teaching them how to do it. There's a way to do everything. And with the words that we train the dogs to and all the motions and everybody knows that is handling the dog in some cases. It's not an everyday occurrence usually. Then how to do it, how to convey to the dog so that the dog doesn't get untrained. So, yeah.
I think one thing we should touch on is the difference between an emotional support animal and then a service animal. Because
right.
I think people kind of tend to blur them together if they don't know. So
right.
Yeah, if you could explain the difference.
Yeah, well, an emotional support dog, there are no stipulations on what comprises as an emotional support dog. It is basically a pet. Really, it's kind of a fancy name for a pet. Some people will get a note from their doctor to say this is an emotional support dog this person needs for psychological reasons. But that is only perk to that is you may not have to pay a pet deposit if you move into an apartment. So that's about the extent of it. Those dogs do not have what we call public access privileges. They're just, you know, basically really nice pets that make the person feel better and that doesn't go much farther than that. So, but if a dog, you hear about doctors writing letters and things, and it's usually, that's what it is. It's if maybe they would not have to pay a pet deposit. Certainly, if the dog destroys the curtains or something, they might have to. So, I mean, there's no benefit out in public. There is no public access. So that's where people really blur. And then the definition of a service dog is that it's been trained to that person's specific disability. You know, if it's autism or if it's diabetic alert, seizure alert, mobility, the dog has been trained specifically for those disabilities. And they have to do certain things to mitigate whatever the person's problems are. So when you go into a store or a restaurant, there's certain things that can be asked of the individual. And it's basically, is this a service dog? What are the things that the dog does? So you don't have to demonstrate you know, right there in the entrance to a restaurant. You don't have to like put on a show, and nobody wants to do that anyway. They just want to be like, get through it. But you might be asked a couple things. So if it's diabetic, you know, it alerts me, it's a medical alert dog. To, you know, usually if you say a medical alert dog and it provides alerts for me or whatever, usually people, they're fine with that. More so is the problem where businesses do not ask. They just let them through because they don't want a confrontation. They don't want somebody getting upset with them as they enter the store. And so they just give them a pass and let them go. And that's how we end up in public with this problem where we have dogs that the lines are totally blurred.
Right.
But what I hear all the time in training is that, well, thank you for having a real service dog. Thank you. And I'm like, well, thank you for, you know, appreciating that, because they see people that work at these large stores and businesses, they see this all the time, and it's a battle. Because they get in there and they're disruptive and they're barking at people or defecating on the floor. And then certainly for us, it's a problem because our dogs are trained to just go. So they go everywhere. They have been trained since they were babies to go just about anywhere a dog can safely go. Certainly if you're going to get an MRI, somebody's going to have to hold the dog because you don't want to expose the dog to that. But almost everywhere, the dog is allowed to go. Very, very few exceptions. It's a problem when you get into a large store and all of a sudden some dog jumps out at you that's not under control. But some of the businesses are just afraid. It's right on the ADA website online. You can look it up and see what you can say, what you can't say. Where they get really fussy is if you go into a federal building or a courthouse, there they really check. They may even pat down your dog, you know, in a rare case. If you haven't taken the vest off, they put you through a scan like an airport. But in the air, they used to have emotional support dogs on planes. We have ADA, America's Disability Act, here on the ground. But in the air, they have the Air Carriers Act or something like that. So it's different up there. So they were letting people bring on emotional support dogs. And then they started having problems with other passengers getting bit. So,
goodness.
It happened. Oh, yeah. Boy. There was a couple cases that really made the news. So you get up in the air and all the reasons why they have to like bring a plane down. We've heard of multiple cases recently over a window blew out or somebody at, you know, if somebody acts up on the plane and they have to come down, well, imagine if you had somebody getting bit by a dog. So the service dogs have all the rights, that it needs to be a real service dog. But that's the emotional support versus service dog concept.
Well, I did want to share a video from your organization so people can actually see one of the dogs in action. So
okay.
Let me pull that up real quick.
Okay.
Have been diagnosed with PTSD. I've had nightmares for a little over 20 years, 4 to 5 nights a week. My nightmares were debilitating. I was screaming, I was thrashing, and it had gotten to the point where my wife and I have not slept in the same bed for like 22 years. I just wasn't sleeping. My relationships with people was pretty volatile because one day I'm okay, the next day I'm not. I just didn't want to keep living this way because I felt like this isn't living. This is existing. The doctors had said they've done everything they can. I was at the max on meds. I was doing counseling once a week, sometimes twice a week. I tried the live-in PTSD clinics. I felt like, you know, my wife and kids would be better off without me. My counselor has suggested for years, you really need to look for a service dog. It just gave me hope. About Truman, but the first couple nights, I decided I'm going to have him up on the bed. I would just breathe, line up my breathing with his, and I go back to sleep. What I noticed was I was able to think more during the day. I was also starting to make better relationships with people. My mood swings were really shifting. Suman is really good at sensing and communicating when I'm really stressed. But when he nudges me, it makes me aware something is going on. And what is going on is the thing that he's trained to do, which is, John, your level of anxiety, your chemicals are changing. You need to readjust something right now. I think Truman understands that inside I'm pretty broken. And I don't have to put on a facade. You know, he knows who I am. And even right now, he knows that I'm getting... So he's like, gotta take care of you. I've had Truman for about 13 and a half months right now. And he has revolutionized my ability to live. I'm not existing anymore. I'm enjoying life. I am down to less than 3 nightmares a month. I have no anti-nightmare medication. I have fallen in love with Pave. Truman has changed my life. If they didn't provide that, honestly, I'm not sure I'd be here. If there are veterans that are struggling with PTSD, I would say get a hold of Pave because they're going to find a dog that meets your needs. And he's revolutionized my life. Seriously.
What a beautiful story. Oh my goodness. And yeah, seeing Truman pop up there when he started to get emotional.
Yes. Yeah.
Just incredible.
That's it. I see that over and over, and the dogs catch us off guard because part of you is going, what? Oh my goodness. Like, you can't believe what you just saw. And I'm the trainer. I train Truman, and he amazed me. And once he got really connected to John, John lives fairly close to me. So I see this dog like at least once a month. He was just here a few days ago. But he's so stuck on John that he just like, oh, I'm here because we're going to do my toenails, right? Oh. Another thing that I can share with you about this pair is he mentioned a wife, and they also have a son and daughter-in-law and some little girls, and they all live together. And they're a very wholesome family. They play games together. But he discovered that, he said, Cheryl, when we play family games, I have to put Truman in his crate. I'm like, why? He said, because he tells on me. He will give away. He can feel, he senses that John does not have a good hand or in cards or whatever it is. And he jumps up. And so the family, even these little children, started watching the dog rather than wondering. And that's how intuitive they are. So it doesn't have to be just this horrible rush of emotion, very negative. And this dog has also picked up on other dying people that John may go to visit, comforting a child who just lost a sibling. I mean, it's not that you go out in public and just like, here, anybody need help? But in a case like that, there have been some stories that I've heard. And he said, is that okay? And I'm like, how could you deny, you know, that it just, they pick up, they will pick it up. And so, but I had to tell you the story about the games because, when he said he has to put him away, I'm like, what are you talking about? You don't put the dog away. John is doing very well, and he does not have nightmares anymore.
He doesn't. That is absolutely incredible.
He doesn't. Wow. And lack of sleep, if it's ongoing over a long period of time, I mean, we all know what it feels like to not have slept the night before. But imagine if that was your life and you tried everything.
I know. I've lived it. At some point it becomes an emotional issue with the lack of sleep because you just become so hopeless. And it's not just that your body is tired, you're mentally exhausted too. So I definitely know. And I have to say just this huge thank you for all that you're doing for veterans, because I was one that I couldn't leave my apartment. I was completely shut in the year of 2022. I could barely go check my mailbox. So to see that other people are making this progress, and it's through you and creating this strong bond with their dog is, thank you so much for that. That is just absolutely amazing that you're in this world doing this with people.
Well, I just feel I was led to it, and I'm so sensitive to the women because we have a lot on our plate, and when they don't feel adequate or they just don't think they can stand up to the world and their them specifically and the ways that it manifests itself, lack of confidence, you know, they just victimized, you know, and it's just ongoing if they don't find something that helps. And then if they're trying to play any role in the world, you know, as an employee, employer, a mom, a spouse, it's really hard. It's hard for them because we're just so used to it. I mean, we're the givers, and they can't, if they're not able to give, then that's where the pain is. And I think we're fairly selfless, but they can't give and get themselves out of it. And so I love all these women. I try to get some of them together now and then, even on a virtual meetup. And because another thing specific, I think, to women is that they don't have as much camaraderie. I mean, they don't even know that the other ones are really out there. So you feel like it's only you that has this problem. And then when they realize, like, they've been isolating all this time, they didn't know, you know, they don't want to go to the VA. And because it's mostly men, and a lot of the counselors are men, you know, so they just feel overwhelmed even going there, let alone do they really, really understand that there's these other women. And so to sometimes get them together, and they have this in common that they have PAVE dogs. And it just, you know, introducing any chance I get and just seeing, like, it's like they've been hiding to the point where they didn't know that there were others. And that is so heartbreaking. The dog is really the one that gets them out, and the dogs are so intuitive, and we're definitely part of that process in making it all happen, putting all the pieces together to make it happen. But the intuition it's just innate to the dogs. It's pretty amazing. They just have to be trained and then connected with the right person.
Yeah, and they're saving lives, which is just invaluable. So Cheryl, how can people reach you? So if they maybe want to donate or learn some more information, share the website and some of your social media?
Yeah, so I would say definitely go to the website, because if people would like to talk to someone about the dogs, like potentially receiving a dog, there is a form they can fill out, just a little inquiry form. And then we contact them. If people are interested in volunteering, there's a form for that. It's included in there. There is a form for that. Then donate, same thing. They can donate, you know, donate their time, donate their money. But it's all on the website. So if they get on there and just look around, and we're really quick about getting back to people, we will answer them. They'll get a response of some sort. And, you know, it just, you really know that we're not alone, and we can't do all this alone. So we do need participation by other people. We certainly do. So I would say just the website would be the way to go, because then you can submit something there and that will, you know, come right to us. And then the right person would get back to you.
Perfect. Well, again, thank you so much for all that your organization is doing, not only for veterans, but anyone that is in need. That is just incredible work. So thank you so much. To visit the website, it is PAVE USA.org. Mm-hmm. And you can go there and learn about the dogs, maybe donate some time or some money, and just help give back to this wonderful organization. So thank you again so much, Cheryl. on behalf of many veterans that were struggling to the point of complete isolation. We owe a lot to people like you.
So thank you so much. And thank you for having us.
Wasn't that awesome? I love this woman. She is so kind and so precious. And talking to her was such a joy. I'm sure you're going to want information on how service dogs may help you in your journey with MST and healing from it. So I will have all the information in the show notes. If you want to leave a note for Cheryl, go to her episode on our website, silencevoicesmst.com. Go ahead and click on her episode and you will see a button that says send Cheryl a message. That will take you to Salute Our Survivors. She, again, would love to hear from you and give you more information on how this program works. Also, just another reminder, our Facebook group is active now, The Advocates of MST. Go ahead and click join, and you do have a few questions to answer, but there is a free giveaway involved. This Facebook group is more than support. Everyone is welcome, and we are going to start activism together. I think it's going to be pretty exciting, and the people that have already joined, they're ready to go. So we'd love for you to be a part of that. Our next interview is with an author and public speaker, and she's going to share her journey from pain to triumph. Again, I'm your host, Rachel Smith, and your voice is a weapon in the fight against MST. Don't be afraid to share your story. Till next time, take care.
Remember, our voices are weapons in the fight against MST. Stay connected, share your story, and join our fight to end military sexual trauma for good. Until next time, thanks for listening to the Silence Voices of MST.